Hello and welcome. My name is Blanna Tracy and this is my podcast, Untold. Across this 10-part series, I'll be taking a look at different facets of Irish society and speaking to people with unique voices and stories. This will be my last episode for a while as the COVID-19 situation means that I can't carry out any interviews right now. But I'm glad this is my last one for the moment, as it's one of my favourites. In this episode, I speak with trans woman Violet O'Brien. You may have come across some of her advocacy work. Well, I sat down with her to find out about her journey. From the first signs of being trans, to coming out, to dating, and how one moment interrailing gave her the courage to become the woman she always knew she was. But let's start at the very beginning. What was it like growing up?
Growing up in Ireland, which in the 90s, which doesn't seem very long ago, but now it's like 20 years plus, 25 years, it felt entirely different. You know, I didn't have internet till I was about 13, 14. And the idea of trans people and even gay people to an extent was pretty much kind of a hushed topic. I remember one of my first instances of seeing any sort of gender non-conforming person was Shirley Temple Bar on Telly Bingo.
Yeah.
And that was like really bizarre to me. On like, I'd have like days off school and I'd be watching RT, and some days she would present in drag and sometimes out of drag. And I was so confused as to how this person could switch between male and female, because my mind didn't see, you know, understand drag as a concept or an art form. And I remember that was the first time where I just kind of considered the idea that gender was something we can play with and merge with, and that kind of planted the seed.
What age were you when this was, when you saw Shirley Temple Bar?
Like between 5 and 8, I'd say.
Okay, so you were really, really young.
Yeah, it was
okay.
Like before I could have even processed what I was feeling. It was just something in my brain had been ignited and I was just like eating my cereal with my jaw dropped.
Yeah, like, what is this?
Yeah.
And I've read some pieces that you've written, and I found it really interesting when you talked about, like, when you were a child and a teenager, you're really into gaming.
Yeah.
And how, for you looking back, maybe it was a little bit of a sign that you would pick the female character.
Yeah. Early stages, I guess, would be Super Mario Kart on the Super Nintendo. I would pick Peach religiously. And like, it didn't mean anything to me then, just like Shirley Temple Bar. You know, it wasn't in my head that I was like, I am a girl, I'm picking a girl. It was just like, this is the character that stands out to me, and this character that, like, you know, in my infantile brain is just like colors, you know, already there's like gender stereotyping going on, and it just, this made sense to me to pick her.
Okay.
And then as I got older, you know, as the gaming era progressed into like PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, you know, things become more complex, and rather than like a collection of colored pixels, you know, characters become fully fleshed models, and obviously I begin to socialize more in the world. It started to become a bit more kind of taboo for me to be picking these characters.
Okay.
So, like, I'd be playing shooting games with my friends on, like, PS2, like, in the same room as them. And because we'd play for hours, we'd come up with, like, stories and narratives of our own within the game. And I'd have to be, like, justifying that I keep picking these female characters. And oftentimes I'd joke it off that, like, it was due to a heterosexual attraction and that, you know.
Okay.
You know, you'd rather look at this character than this character, which I think is pretty common excuse.
Yeah.
But really, it was just that, you know, if I get to live in a different world than my own, in my head, it was just, why would I want to keep living this way that I obviously was not enjoying, but couldn't really rationalize to that extent at the time.
And so then at what point did you start thinking to yourself, hang on, I don't feel like this person that I'm supposed to be. I feel like I am a girl.
It was really kind of like, rather than like a slow burn, it was just an explosion. Because I had no real experience or even room to kind of investigate that. Growing up, I thought I was just kind of the most average straight white guy. I was just into games and football, and, you know, I wasn't involved in like queer groups or I wasn't in any scenes where I felt I could really explore that.
Yeah, and you also went to an all boys school.
Yeah, and that was like, you know, keep your head down as much as humanly possible.
Yeah.
I think I went as a girl for Halloween 1 year, and within a week the whole school at the time thought, I won't use the words that they thought I was, but I mean, I guess they were right in retrospect, but you know, rumors spread and people think you're gay or trans, and based off of what, you know, at the time was a pretty harmless joke for Halloween. And people will just run with anything.
They do. And I think when you're a teenager, you just do not want to stand out in any way. You want to be a wallflower. You just want to get through those years, get into college, get into the real world or whatever it is. Yeah. But I mean, did you experience bullying or people kind of being mean to you?
Yeah, but I mean, obviously it wasn't about my gender expression or identity, because I was just playing it as safe as possible, and you're in your uniform every day. I had like long hair, which at the time just got me called emo. I got bullied just because I was different, and you know, I wasn't great socially at the time, and I would be a bit awkward.
Okay.
And you know, people just sense that and they'll pick up on it from day one, and kind of once you have a name for that, once that sticks, it's very hard to shake. And it wasn't until about, I guess, fourth year that it started to shift and people just grew up and started focusing on their own stuff.
Okay. So you mentioned that there was an explosion.
Yeah. So this, like, I kind of knew in the back of my head that there was something. You know, I wasn't, there was some sort of discomfort in my body. But I found out when I was about 12 that I had Asperger's syndrome. And I was kind of just sweeping everything under that rug, that I was just like, if I don't feel right about anything, that's Asperger's and that happens. And I wasn't really allowing myself to think about, you know, why I would purposely like walk through the women's section in clothes shops, and why I would want to double back, and why like going as a girl for Halloween that year made so much sense. And I just wasn't really allowing myself the time to think. Meanwhile, like, my closest friend knew exactly what was happening, but
oh, really?
Was just kind of giving me the time to figure it out.
And was your closest friend a girl?
Yeah.
Okay, so she sensed that.
Yeah.
Or what, like, did she sense, do you think?
I wouldn't know particularly, but I think she knew that. Just from the time we'd spent together and the things I would kind of joke about and then maybe let something slip about, that there was more to my gender than I was letting on.
Okay. You mentioned there that when you dressed up as a girl for Halloween, it made sense.
Yeah, it just, you know, at first it was like, oh, you know, this will be funny, you know, it'll be great. And then I think she was the one who did my makeup that night. And within like 5 minutes, it just didn't, like, it didn't feel like a joke. It was just like, oh, I really like this. This is a really nice experience.
Yeah.
And we went out and I wasn't, you know, you know, the kind of stereotypical lad who goes out on Halloween dressed as a girl. And,
yeah.
You know, like, everyone's grabbing the boobs and, you know, it's real funny. And I was just like, this, I'm not really feeling any of that. I just kind of like existing like this. And
yeah.
Particularly on Halloween, because you haven't got that scrutiny and people aren't, you know, investigating. And I think because I was quite young, I was almost somewhat androgynous as well.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was just like a really nice experience. And we ended up going back to her house quite early, and we just like sat in her house while I was like still in costume. And I think it was probably around that time that she realized that like I wasn't getting changed back, as a regular guy would probably be quite keen to do.
Yeah, you were happy. You felt really comfortable.
Yeah.
More comfortable.
Yeah. Which should have been alarm bells in my head at the time, but I was just like, you know, I don't want to address this. I don't want to open that box and see what's inside.
Okay. When you were a child, you went to the Gaeltacht, is that right?
Yeah.
And you, there was one night at a ceilidh, and it was a cross-dress ceilidh?
Yeah, which probably wouldn't fly nowadays. Like, I'd come out of my shell a bit socially, and I made friends with other girls there. And I felt more comfortable asking if I could take some of their clothes for this ceilidh. And, like, it was, looking back, it was just, like, a really bizarre, like, 13-year-old disco girl outfit, which is quite fitting. It was like bright pink tights and like a blue tank top and then some flowery skirt.
Yeah.
And again, it was like, you know, because I was in a house with all boys everyone was getting ready and there was other boys who were dressing up, and it was all very funny. And I remember just privately going into a bathroom to get dressed and just being like, this, you know, again, it wasn't, oh, this is funny. It was like, oh, this is really nice.
Yeah.
And I really liked how I looked. And,
yeah.
Again, really, that was even younger than the Halloween. So it was just prepubescent in every sense.
Yeah.
And I had long hair and I just really liked how I looked and I liked how it felt. And I liked how it felt to kind of socialize like that. And looking back now, it seems quite strange that I never like played into a shtick, or it was never a joke in any way. It was just like, I was kind of free to just kind of exist as myself for the first time.
Yeah. And when you, I mean, you were 13, 14 at that time. Mm-hmm. Did you, when you got back from the Gaeltacht, you know, did you kind of think, oh, I'd love to dress up again? Like, yeah. Did you do it privately?
Yeah. I like, obviously through the years, there would be like, I guess, means I would find to dress up. Sometimes I would buy something from a charity shop, or I did a lot of online shopping and, you know, I get something that I would try on privately. But even still, you have these ways to rationalize it, that it's just, you know, lots of people do this, you know.
Yeah.
I kind of just thought, I'm probably a crossdresser and that's normal enough, and I'm sure a lot more people than would ever say do it in private.
Yeah. And this is while you're in secondary school?
Yeah.
Okay.
This would be around, I guess, fourth, fifth year in secondary school. Probably after that Halloween, because I realized that, you know, this was something I enjoyed doing.
Okay.
So I would often, because I'm the youngest in my family, I was in secondary school while my brothers were in college. So I would get the half day on Wednesdays, and I would come home on Wednesdays and then get dressed up in private and just kind of enjoy 2 hours by myself in the house. And then I'd have all these alarms set to make sure that before anything happened, I'd be back, everything would go back into the wardrobe.
No way. So did you have all those clothes kind of hidden so that no one would find them?
Yeah, just like, I'm pretty sure everyone in my family found them at some point.
Oh, really?
And everyone just kept it. Because after it came out, there was a lot of, oh, well, you know, that actually makes sense. I found.
Yeah. Did they ask any, like, if someone did come across something, did they ask you, oh, what's the story with this?
I think my dad did. My dad found a pair of shoes, and I was just like, I think I tried to pretend that a girl had stayed over and left them there.
Okay.
And he was secretly quite like chuffed with himself.
Okay. Then, like a kind of a pat on the back, well done, son, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right.
There was a lot of that. Like, I remember one time I was just kind of, I think I was just like browsing through like women's shopping websites on the computer, and like I would treat that as if I was watching porn, so that like if anyone came in, it would be like XXX, you know, incognito mode. And I remember once my dad looked through the window into the room and saw it and like banged on the window. Of course, I closed everything and panically like turned around.
Yeah.
And he just saw women on the screen and assumed I'd been watching porn.
Okay. Okay. And so you sort of got away with it.
Yeah. I remember thinking, you know, I should, you know, I've been caught out. And he came in to me and said, I'm just glad it was women.
Oh, really?
I was just like, oh, wow. This is going to be an interesting talk down the line.
Right. And even so, at that point, you knew that eventually you were going to have to talk to your parents about what you were feeling.
Well, it was just, I was kind of tossing up between whether this was something I would explore later on, or whether it would just be something I kept private with like a loved one or immediate family. Because, I mean, I kind of had this idea in my head that once I moved out, I just kind of knew life and see what happened.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm sure lots of people can identify with that.
Yeah. Kind
of, you know, because it is such a private thing. And then, you know, if you're sharing a house with people, it's like everybody knows everything about each other.
Yeah.
But if there's something that you're just not ready to share yet, you're like looking to the future. When can I just be who I want to be?
At what point will I have the liberty to explore this?
Exactly. At what point did you?
After my first year in college, I went to interrailing. It was supposed to be around Europe, but it ended up just kind of being a trip around Germany, because that was where I really liked. And I had an idea in my head at the time when I was leaving that I might explore this while I was away, just because I knew of Germany kind of progressive alternative place where, you know, things can happen that wouldn't happen in Ireland.
Yeah. And were you traveling with a group of pals?
No, it was just by myself.
Okay.
I think that was kind of subconsciously that, you know, I didn't want, this was a journey about me and I wanted to have that freedom away from anyone that would know me.
Yeah.
So I got to Cologne in Germany and I met a group of people there, just from around the world who were traveling. And while I was there, I saw a trans woman just out in like a chip shop, or their version of a chip shop. And she was just chatting to the owner and it was just really casual and really just mundane stuff. And like, I was just like slack jawed, couldn't believe it, because up until then, which, like, I was 19, so this was, I don't know how maths work, 2013.
Okay.
So 7 years ago, up until then, all I'd seen of trans people were like Jerry Springer, you know, I found out, you know, this woman's secretly a man, and real sensational Daily Mail son shit, really.
Yeah.
That's just, you know, make it out to be a gimmick and a spectacle. And it was so alarming to just see this woman existing really plainly that I was just like, that, I didn't realize I had that option.
Okay.
And instantly I was like, I have to explore this now, because I think what put it off for me for so long was that I couldn't live a normal life, because, you know, I'm a pretty quiet, introverted person. And I thought if I wanted to explore my gender, I would suddenly have to become sort of this freak show person who would only make friends with, you know, like the fringes of society, and would only ever be accepted in dark rooms and sex clubs.
Yeah.
And to see this woman just like happily going about her day, I realized I had to recontextualize everything I had thought.
Isn't that just amazing? Like, when you really think about it, that could happen for anybody in any shape or form. Just when you see someone just being their honest selves, how it can just inspire someone. Like, I wonder, does that person know?
Not a hope. Like,
the effect that she had on you.
She just went home with her food. And it gives me, like, when I have my worst days, that I think, well, maybe I've done that for someone else.
Exactly. Know? That's
I hope someone else has seen me and thought, well, if she can do it, then I can do it. And then,
yeah. It's a ripple effect, isn't it? Yeah,
it all goes back to, like, it's like vampires where you, like, lead up to the head vampire.
Yeah.
So I went.
So that night.
Not that night. I just kind of planted in my brain, because I knew I was going to Berlin next, and I knew Berlin was a really bizarre place. Before I left Cologne, I bought a black maxi dress, real kind of gothic thing. Totally inappropriate for the middle of summer, by the way. I learned that lesson quickly. And I got to Berlin, and I was with one of the group that I had met in Cologne, and we did a tour of Berlin. And I remember my tour guide at the end of that tour said something about Berlin being the place where you could be whoever you wanted to be freely and happily. And I was like, well, that kind of seals it. I have to try this now. Either that day or the next day, I went back to the hostel, got changed, and just went out with this girl. And it was really just walking around, you know, seeing the sights. And
you had the dress on?
Yeah.
Did you say to this girl, I want to try something? Like, did she know that this was a big moment for you?
Yeah, I told her the night I met her, just because I was, you know, it was definitely in my head that this was something I'd consider.
Mm.
And I think she had said something that kind of sparked it in me that I could trust her and talk to her about it. So I told her the first night I met her about this kind of other side to my gender and personality. And we kind of talked as we went along and on the journey down that this might be something I would explore.
Yeah.
And then we just went out together. And there are certain areas of Berlin where me in like in the middle of summer in like a floor length gothic dress with like a really cheap wig from China and no makeup didn't even register with most
really
people. Like,
incredible. So you just blended in.
Yeah.
Okay, brilliant. Just,
if anything, I was probably a little boring, you know.
Oh, really?
People were like, you could have done more. But that was great because
how did it feel?
It was great to be like almost boring because I was afraid to speak to anyone, and I thought if anyone would even look at me twice that, you know, I'd be chased away. And I was really catastrophizing it. And really, these people who live in Berlin, you know, they see people walking around in bondage gear and it doesn't even register with them. Everyone has more important shit to do than to worry about this newly out trans woman.
But did it make you feel amazing? Like, or how did you feel walking around wearing this dress and the wig?
Terrified. Like, I want to say that it was really inspiring and, you know, I knew exactly who I was, but I was absolutely bricking it the whole way. Just because I had never even considered the possibility of doing this, and I was in a strange place among new people, and I just had no idea really how people would react. Looking back now, I kind of know Berlin much better, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, what on earth were you afraid of? But it was really nice that I wasn't a spectacle, because that was what I wanted for myself, to, you know, not be gawked at or have photos taken. I didn't want to go out and be some sort of tourist attraction.
When you came back then from Interrailing, you came back from Berlin, what happened?
I had the intention of just like going back into the closet. Like, I was home like a week, 2 weeks, and I was just like, no, this isn't going to work anymore. I can't keep up. You know, it's like putting toothpaste back in the tube. It can't be done. So eventually one night, on a kind of rare occasion where my parents were both in the same place and in good form, I just went to the bathroom. And, you know, when you go to the bathroom and you've had a lot to drink and you hype yourself up in the mirror.
Okay.
I was just like, this is it. I'm gonna do it. I'm going to tell them. And yeah, told my parents. And obviously with so much drink on board, it was all just tears and sobs, and it was very nice. And then the next day everyone's hangover set in and people had to kind of reevaluate.
Okay. How did they respond to you opening up to them and telling them?
Well, my mum knew because she cleaned my room for 20 years and would have found lots of these little things that are hidden under beds and in wardrobes. My dad was more taken aback, so it took him quite a while to process it and to understand it. But my mum knew and was pretty supportive from day one, you know.
Yeah.
The main challenge for her was just understanding, because like me, before I went away, I had no real reference point for any of this.
Yeah.
And it was a much different place.
Okay.
6-7 years ago than it is now.
And then I guess there's the whole thing of dressing the way that you want to dress.
Yeah.
Obviously you were given a male name.
Yeah.
So there's kind of changing your name and all that. So at what point did you say to your parents, I'd like you to refer to me as Violet?
Well, Violet came quite recently. I went by another name that my friends had been calling me for a while before I came out to my parents, because they kind of had this understanding of my more fluctuating gender at that time.
Yeah.
So I just said, you know, I said to my parents, look, my friends are calling me this.
Yeah.
You can do that too. It's like, in my head, I knew I wanted the name Violet.
Okay.
But I didn't want to have my friends calling me one name. And then, I thought if my friends were already calling me a name, it might seem less extreme to my parents.
Yeah.
So I just thought it'd be easier for my parents if, you know, there was this name kind of already established by other people and it wouldn't seem so extreme. You make a lot of mistakes early in transition in ways that you can kind of accommodate people. And really from the get-go, I should have just been like, Violet is the name I want.
Okay.
But luckily I was able to get around to that when I came to legally change my name about 6 months ago.
Okay.
Just because I thought, you know, if I'm going to legally change my name and go through all that hassle, I should do the name that I want.
Yeah. Of course.
So I told my that was like a second coming out, because I told my parents and I had to tell my friends who had given me my old name and had become quite attached to that. And it was almost a bit sad in a way to say, look, I really appreciate that you accepted me all that time back and started calling me this name and were really sweet about it. But I have to kind of reject that now and do my own thing.
Okay.
But I always wanted Violet. I just hadn't always had the courage to say it.
Okay. Yeah. And is it, like, I'm trying to imagine, like, I presume, is it a hard transition for people to, obviously they know you as a name, and then they have to change it. Was it, did it take a whole lot of time, or was it actually fine? People just like, okay, this is how you want to be known.
It varied. Like, some people, I found if I saw people in groups, they got it quicker.
Okay.
So if there's a group of people that kind of self-correct each other and you'd hear other people say it.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I was in college with a group of my friends, one person might call me Violet, and then the other person will hear and they'll be like, oh, yeah, you know, they might not have been thinking it, but they'd realize her name's Violet. I should call her Violet.
Yeah.
And it just, it's like a community, and it self-corrects, and
yeah,
the idea spreads much easier.
Yeah.
And then I found it was harder still for people I knew kind of more in isolation. And there are other factors, of course, with age, and, you know, it was harder for my parents. They're much older, and the idea of someone changing their name.
Yeah.
And they would have known me so much longer.
Mm.
But, like, say, for instance, my dad would have quite a tough time because I'd only ever seen my dad by myself with him. And if he gets the name wrong, it's up to me to correct him.
Mm.
And he wouldn't hear anyone else saying my name. And his friends would be asking me about how I am referring to my old name.
Yeah.
And he'd have, you know, feedback in the wrong way.
Okay. Yeah. I understand what you're saying. Yeah. And can I ask, obviously, the name, it's a kind of sensitive topic, I guess, for people who are trans, and just for people who are listening, you know, and they want to educate themselves and they want to be sensitive. What's the, you know, it's not nice to refer to somebody who's trans. It's not nice to bring up their old name.
Yeah. Well, it can be quite difficult for a lot of trans people to hear their old name.
Okay.
Some people, very few trans people, are okay with it and are okay talking about it.
Yeah.
But it's just, there's usually so much trauma attached to it, and you've worked so hard to kind of get away from it.
Yeah.
That it just can feel quite hurtful. It's not, you know, people think that trans people are going to freak out, and there's all these, you know, quite bigoted ideas about people losing their shit all the time because you use the wrong pronoun once.
Okay.
All the trans people I've ever met, if you get their pronouns or the names wrong, sometimes they'll politely correct you, or they'll just be quite sad about it and internalize it.
Mm.
And oftentimes it's a matter of safety, you know. Sometimes I'll be out with someone, and if somebody gets my pronouns wrong, someone else is going to be looking at it and like, hold on a sec, you know.
Yeah.
Because in a way you're outing that person to a group of people who may not be okay with it.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not just one moment of like, great, this is my name now. It's all these little moments. Like, I loved when I got my first ID.
Yeah.
And it was my photo, and it was Violet, and it just, you know, it was someone I was happy to look at, and it was a name I was happy to read.
Yeah.
Is really nice now, just to be, you know, to go into a club and be like, look, this is Violet. You know, you don't feel like you're tricking people so much.
Right. Okay.
There's no being caught out or anything. It's just, you know, my IDs are me now.
I'm
not hoping that somebody can connect the dots on the day or.
Mm. And what's it like, you know, obviously it was, as you're saying, it's no one big moment. It's kind of slowly over time. Like when you started dressing as your true self.
Yeah.
Did you start doing it like every day, or was it just kind of once a week, or how did that work?
Yeah, it was very staggered like that. Because I had no experience, and I had no like older sister or anything to kind of help me, or really any kind of support there to figure it out. So I took it very slowly and very staggered, and then some days I'd present as female, others as male. And it was quite difficult for the people around me to kind of figure out what was going on, because, as I say, no one really knew what was happening, and it wasn't a topic that's discussed quite as much as it is now.
Yeah.
So it was during the summer that I came out, and I put up a post on Facebook just to say, look, I am transitioning. I'm figuring it out. It's going to be slow. It's going to be messy. Just kind of give me the space, and hopefully we'll all get through it together.
Yeah.
I guess I saw a bit more value. Some people, when they transition, they will do so privately for a long time.
Okay.
And they will grow their hair out and they'll figure out makeup and they'll get a wardrobe together.
Yeah.
And then all at once, it will just be like a switch.
Okay.
And then, you know, they'll have the clothes, they'll have the makeup and they'll have the hair and they'll be able to kind of commit full time to something.
Okay.
And I think I saw the value in that back then, just because it was really messy. And like, I didn't know what I was doing and I was going out, you know, with like beard shadow and things that like I wasn't happy with and I didn't like how I looked. But I felt like I had to, in a way, that, you know, if I wasn't dressing, presenting as female this number of days, that I wasn't really trans enough and that I couldn't expect people to get my pronouns right.
Yeah.
If I wasn't putting in my effort.
Okay.
So I think if I were to go back and redo it, I'd probably take a bit of time privately to figure out my gender expression as opposed to my gender identity.
Okay. You've mentioned a couple of times about safety. Yeah. And I just wanted to ask you, what has been your experience with safety?
I think I've had to wise up very quickly because, as I say, growing up, I was straight white guy. The world was built for me in every way. And I never had to think about, you know, walking home alone at night or ways, you know, leaving my drink down in a bar. No one was going to spike me. It never crossed my mind that this was an unsafe thing to do. And then all of a sudden, that all flips. You know, now I am a trans woman, I am fetishized and I am desired in ways that are like secretive and dangerous and people will kill you over it. And you have to be very smart very quickly about it. And like, you know, there are the people who love you that will do you harm and there are people that will hate you and do you harm.
Yeah.
So I've been fortunate that I have been relatively free from any sort of hate crimes or abuse. I've never been really attacked and get a bottle thrown at me once on a dart.
You did?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I hit the panel over my head, thankfully.
Jesus and Christ.
The lads ran off at the stop we were at. And I think that's fortunately the worst I've had to deal with. So there's the like physical safety and then there's a lot of kind of a more harassment and just kind of looking out for yourself and not put yourself in dangerous situations. Like, there is no safe place to go out as a woman by yourself because there will always be men seeking to abuse that power.
I hope you don't mind. I just wanted to ask you a little bit about like treatments and stuff that you might be going through just to kind of be your true self and be the vision of the person that you feel like you are. So what sort of treatments have you gone through?
First thing was to start medically transitioning. So this entails blocking the natural production of testosterone in your body and then replacing that with estrogen.
Okay.
Which, like, it sounds a very simple process and hopefully one day it will be.
Yeah.
But I had to wait 3 years before I was allowed to start that process, which is particularly kind of troubling weight because though I was quite old, I was still in the latter stages of puberty. So there were still things happening in my body, changes happening that would be irreversible.
Oh, right. Okay.
And I was kind of racing against those changes to start this treatment. So
can you share why you had to wait for 3 years?
Just waiting lists, you know, the services weren't there.
Okay.
And everyone that wants to start that treatment has to go through quite rigorous psychological evaluations.
Okay.
So it's not a case that I could go to the hospital and say, I want to start on hormone replacement therapy. I have to convince, you know, two separate clinical psychiatrists that I am trans. And that this is something I am of sound body and mind to undertake. And then you kind of have to test the different drugs and see how you go on them and have kind of evaluations while on them to see how you're progressing with them. So it's a very slow process and you're in a queue of a lot of people.
Yeah.
And when, as I say, as your body is changing and things are happening that you're not going to be able to undo, it's really distressing. So like, I was quite fortunate that like, I never got hair on my chest.
Okay.
because that's a lot of then like laser hair removal needed. I obviously had facial hair. I think I've had about 14 sessions now.
And of laser hair removal. Okay. Yeah.
And I'm basically done there. It's just kind of top-ups now just to make sure that nothing comes back in.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about your sexuality, I guess. Are you attracted to men, women, or does it matter to you?
I would say women, but at the same time, I'm kind of open for it to change. Because I think when you really explore your own gender, you really explore what it means to other people and how you view it in other people.
Yeah.
There are anecdotally a lot of trans people who fluctuate their sexuality as they transition because they have this understanding of gender and they kind of realize that they're repressing a lot more than maybe just their gender, but also their sexuality. So when I started the process of transitioning, I left myself very open to the idea that I could be attracted to other genders. And so when I transitioned, I realized that I became a lot more desirable to subsections of men.
Okay.
And they would, you know, I was now getting messages on social media and I was getting offers of things. And I kind of then had to really think for myself, you know, how do I feel about these offers? Are these things I want to take on? Or is this something that I'm pressured to do?
Mm.
And I think I've gone on dates with guys just to kind of check that out and see how I felt about that. And I kind of just keep coming back to only being attracted to women.
Yeah.
So as I say, I'm open to it to change in the future. And if I met a guy who I thought was perfect for me,
yeah,
I really felt infatuated with, I wouldn't close that off to myself and say, well, no, I'm not attracted to men.
Yeah. Okay. But
I think as I'm getting older, I'm starting to realize that that guy will never exist because I just don't think it's possible for me to be attracted to him.
Okay. Okay.
I find it hard dating as a trans person in Ireland because, you know, where it's also new and, you know, there are a lot of people who just aren't open to that in terms of dating trans people.
Okay.
And it's a contentious subject. You know, some people say it's transphobic. Some people accept it. Some people say there's probably biases at play, but, you know, it's up to anyone whether they're willing to investigate those biases in themselves. I find when I go away and I'm, you know, on holidays, I find that my Tinder tends to creep up quite a bit. And, you know, other, like in America and England, other people seem much more open to dating trans people or just like casually seeing trans people.
Yeah.
Whereas in Ireland, we're still a little bit reserved in a lot of ways. You know, we got to go for 12 coffees and 3 drinks and then 1 play and then you meet my parents. And,
right. Okay. I hear you. And what has employment been like? I know that you're only recently out of college.
Yeah.
So is that a difficult conversation to have with prospective employers?
Yeah. I mean, like, ideally, it wouldn't come up. It would just be treat me as any other employee and judge me on my credentials. And I think a lot of my prospective employers have taken that approach and it's been really encouraging that there are a lot of corporate policies in place to really try and welcome trans people into the working world.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is that you never know what's in a person's head, you know. I could go into an interview and give a great interview with someone and think I do great. And they could go back to their coworkers and say, you'll never guess who just came in for an interview, you know.
Yeah.
I was offered not so much a position at a company, but someone I knew from when I was a child got in touch with me and said that they were looking for people to work in just kind of an administrative tech role. And I said, absolutely, I can do that. It's part-time, it's manageable, it's perfect for me. But this person, because I had known them when I was so much younger, didn't know I had transitioned.
Okay.
So I didn't know when to kind of have that conversation.
Okay.
I was at home when they contacted me, and I was quite like, I guess androgynously presenting, and they didn't cop it then and there.
Okay.
And I didn't know whether I should say it or not. So I thought, right, I'll give them my CV, and that will kind of tell the story, because my CV will mention my new name, my new details, and my CV will have instances of my advocacy work and, you know, talking about trans people in tech and minority representation in employment. And I thought, if I give him that CV, he'll put the pieces together and we won't have to have the kind of awkward conversation.
Okay.
You know, it'll save us both that conversation. So he rang me back after reading through my CV and was really confused, hadn't put any of it together, and was, you know, didn't even know who I was. He was, because he was expecting a CV of my old name and my old details.
Right.
Couldn't understand why he had a CV of Violet O'Brien. So we had to have a conversation anyway. I thought, right, well, you know, at the end of the day, it's not the end of the world. I would have liked to avoid it, but here we are. So he asked how long ago I had transitioned, and I explained it was 4 years. You know, it's not a particularly relevant question, but I wasn't exactly upset about it. You know, it might have just been him being curious, and I try not to see bad faith in anything that I can. And then he asked if I'd had all the surgeries yet. And I just told him it was a completely inappropriate question. That, you know, it had no effect on my work and my ability to do work. And, it, you know, I knew he wasn't asking for the work. He was asking because he wanted to know.
Yeah.
It wasn't going in a report about whether or not I'd be a candidate. He just wanted to know, and he felt entitled to that information.
Yeah.
So I told him, totally inappropriate question, can we move on? I wasn't, you know, lambasting him over it. I wanted to move on as quickly as possible. And he said he was only asking me this question because other people would, you know, if I progressed in the interview status. And I didn't think that was true. I think he was just kind of defending himself, and he thought, you know, well, it's not me that's wrong, you know, anyone would ask that. Which I don't think is true, because I've never had anyone else ask me that in an interview environment. So I think I said to him at the time, I was like, well, they're not allowed to ask that, you know, that's a discrimination and they can't. And I was obviously a little bit annoyed at this point, and I had dropped my kind of friendly interview tone, because this was really frustrating, and I felt like another really good opportunity for me was being taken away because of an irrelevant status. And he then told me that, you know, my candor on the phone actually wasn't very chipper, and that I wouldn't be very good for this job.
Wow.
So, you know, he took it back to somewhere he could critique me.
Yeah.
Because he couldn't say to me, you know, we can't hire you because you're trans. But he just frustrated me to a point that there was another reason to do it. And it was really disheartening. And if I got to the next stage, just then the next interviewer would be have more cop on.
Yeah.
And then I'd start flying, because I'd have my own credentials to back me up.
Yeah.
And it was really annoying just to...
Of course. In what interview for any job should you ever be asked about your body? Like, it's the weirdest thing when you actually just put it like that, black and white. Why are you asking me about my physical body? Yeah. Like, it's so...
What was essentially like a call center job.
Yeah, it's bizarre, totally bizarre. I guess for anyone who's listening who is trans, or they would like to transition, but maybe they don't have the confidence to do it yet, what advice can you share?
My advice would be to contact TENI, that's the Trans Equality Network Ireland. Or if you're a student in Ireland, there's ITSA, which is the Irish Trans Student Alliance. There are support groups that run all the time, and they're really welcoming, accepting people that do not give any flying anything about who you are, where you come from, how good you can present as any gender, or how much you understand your gender or you don't. Even if you're just experimenting and you don't know, you might be trans or you might just be a cross-dresser, you might be gender fluid or fluctuating, or if you just want to have a space where you can explore that and talk about it.
Yeah.
There are spaces for you to be able to have those conversations safely and among people who understand and who are respectful.
Yeah. And they can also give you guidance as well when you want to come out to your family.
Exactly. Yeah. And they can help you talk to your family, and there are support groups for parents. There's Transparency, which is a very good name.
That is a great name. Yeah. Yeah.
But I just saw this week, actually, a friend of mine who I met at an event called Trans Training, which was like a summer camp for trans people in Ireland. It was really nice. You go away to a remote location in the middle of Ireland with like 60 other trans people.
Wow.
And you're staying in a hostel that you booked out entirely for the trans people, and you just get to like drink and eat and play games, and it's a really nice time to just explore your own identity and talk to other people away from any kind of public scrutiny. You know,
yeah.
It doesn't matter what you wear on any day. Mm. It doesn't matter what you present as. And I saw a lot of people that week began their journey of experimenting with their gender.
Yeah.
Because someone could help them with makeup, and there was clothes swaps, and there's people with advice. You know, I was in a room, the rooms were actually gender segregated at some point, which is quite funny. But I was in a room with 6 other trans girls, and we were getting ready for just like the night where we'd all go down to the kitchen and drink and play party games, and we're all getting ready and doing our makeup, and it was really nice to be in a room with other girls where shaving your face was not like something you had to do in private.
Okay. Yeah.
Usually if I was out with other girls and I had run off to shave my face, I'd be really ashamed of it, and because the other girls weren't having to do that. And at Trans Training, it was like, you want to borrow my razor?
Yeah.
You know how I get that spot, and like how to color correct. And it was really nice and encouraging to have this space where I was really quite normal.
Yeah.
And I got to experience a lot of the kind of more standard experiences of a girl in a social setting. So, you know, you got to experience even like the negative stuff, like one girl being jealous of another because the hot guy was attracted to them. And
yeah.
It was really, like, it was nice to have these kind of experiences that I didn't get maybe the first time around.
Yeah.
To kind of get another go at the, like, the Irish college that I should have had.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a person I met that week, who was, I think at the time, possibly identifying as a trans man or a non-binary man.
Okay.
Transitioning from female to male or somewhere along the spectrum. And it was just, it was one of the many people there who were just kind of starting to explore their gender journey.
Mm.
And really lovely people, everyone there. But I just saw on social media in the last week, they have now just accepted that, or not so much accepted, but realized that they are comfortable with the label of female and that they won't be transitioning, but they're happy with just kind of a standard level of gender nonconformity.
Yeah.
That, you know, they might be a female with short hair and wear suits, but at the end of the day, they are comfortable with the label of woman, female.
With those pronouns, yeah.
Yeah, with she pronouns, or she and they, maybe.
Yeah.
But it was really nice, even just to see someone say it's not for me.
Yeah.
But to have that space to just figure it out where they can kind of really understand themselves in a way that will give them, I would hope, a bit more comfort going forward in life. And they'll say, look, I tried it, I experienced it, it wasn't for me.
Yeah.
Because I got very scared in the early stages of my transition that if I came out, that was it and it was final, and that I'd never be able to go back. And I think that's one of the big fears for a lot of people who might be in the closet or thinking about coming out, that, you know, this will be the be all and end all. And that if, you know, once you take that step, it's over. And a lot of people, most people will continue their transitions and will find happiness there.
Mm.
But sometimes it's not the right step for you, and you might find something, you know, more in gender fluidity or non-binary, or you might just be gender non-conforming. So I would hope that the pressure is coming off people to feel that, you know, once I come out as trans, I have to go 100% all the way, every surgery, every treatment, everything.
Mm.
You know, the world is opening up to new ways of expressing your gender and of feeling your gender. There are new ways to describe yourself, and there are communities with every label that you can fit into.
Yeah.
And there will always be other people to support you and help you figure out that journey for yourself.
Violet, thank you so much.
No problem.
That is so good. I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate your honesty and sharing your story. And, you know, like that lady that you saw in Berlin, hopefully this will now inspire even just one person.
I hope so.
Yeah. So thank you very much. An enormous thank you to Violet O'Brien, and you can keep up to date with her on Instagram and Twitter at @biologicalwoman. If you like this episode, please subscribe and share. If you've been affected by anything discussed, please check out Trans Equality Network Ireland or Irish Trans Student Alliance. Or if you're a parent of a trans person, check out transparency.com. As I said at the very beginning, this will be my last episode for a little while. I would like to thank all of my listeners for tuning in, and you can keep up to date with me on my social media at @blonadt. Thank you to Rian and Taz Kelleher for the graphics and finishing touches. A massive thank you to my husband Charlie Moon for the beautiful music and support. And thank you to my agent Jane Russell for all of your encouragement.